Welcome to Cinema Savants, your weekly dose of movie news, movie reviews, and the occasional rumor, with your hosts, Todd Vandenberg and Rob Steele. And coming up in this week's show, the return of Poirot, the return of the Crow, and Hayao Miyazaki, don't you know? I feel like watching Fargo, but before we get too much farther into the show, see, I stopped rhyming. It's something I can do on occasion. Found something very interesting this week. It's not movie news, it's TV related, but it's on Amazon, so it kind of counts. The BBC dropped the trademark on a character that they had previously owned and used the crap out of, and said that no one else can use it as long as they own the trademark, which they don't anymore. So we could see the Stig on the Grand Tour when it comes back on December 8th. I'm not holding my breath, but I think that would be awesome because that's what the show was missing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, watch old episodes of Top Gear and it'll make sense.
I wonder why they made that decision. Why would you?
Well, I think they dropped Top Gear altogether because without Clarkson, Hammond, and May, the show, what's the word I'm looking for?
Sucked.
Yes. Yeah. It didn't work. And they went on to do a show called The Grand Tour on Amazon, which is missing something, and I'm fairly certain it's the Stig, which is something they couldn't bring with them because it would have made sense. Or something like that. I don't know. And actually, this is a slow movie news week, so I want to bring this up. It's kind of related. It has to do with the Pokemon Go game, and it's very time sensitive. That's why I'm putting it on this show instead of any of the other things I do. They had a thing this past week that if they reached a goal of 3 billion, that's with a B as in boy, or why did you bother doing this? No, that's not what starts with letter B. If 3 billion Pokemon were caught this week, the planet gets to catch the Asian region-specific Pokemon Farfetch'd. I found out this morning that goal was reached because there was a Farfetch'd outside, and I'm not in Japan. So if you play the game, look around, because you're only going to be able to do this for like 3 days, I think. But they made some Pokemon that are region-specific. If you don't catch it this week, you're going to have to go to Japan if you actually want it.
A public service announcement for people like Jennifer, in case she's listening, and she listens occasionally, and she's a huge Pokemon fan. Oh, anyway.
That's some movie news.
It's a shame that we're not live from Tokyo.
That would be interesting. Although I did find this out. If you are in Japan, it doesn't work for you because you already have Farfetch'd. You actually get to catch the Australian-specific Pokemon Kangaskhan.
How cool.
Which is really weird, but, you know, no weirder than the money thing I'm about to bring up.
Bring up money.
Kenneth Branagh's Murder on the Orient Express just came out a couple of weeks ago. It made a whopping $66 million as of, 2 days ago, on a budget of $55 million. So it's, you know, up 11, which is enough for them to say, yes, we want you to go ahead and make a sequel, as opposed to Justice League. I don't know. We'll get to that later. go ahead and make a sequel. So they're going to bring back the character of Hercule Poirot back to the big screen in an adaptation of Death on the Nile.
Which
there
makes sense.
Is no date set yet, but there we go.
Following the pattern, because I believe that was the follow-up to Murder on the Orient Express back in the 70s. Death on the Nile was the next one.
I think it was.
So, interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't take that much money to make a sequel. I guess if it's under $100 million, you can do that.
I guess so. They haven't turned a profit, but they're obviously well on their way, unlike some other movies that we'll be talking about.
We'll get to those.
So, and I haven't seen Murder on the Orient Express, but at some point I will get around to it. As in, hopefully, while it's still at the theaters, there's a couple others I want to catch first. But
MoviePass, behold.
That's the purpose of MoviePass. Exactly. Anyway.
Halloween movie news, which is very strange because we just passed Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Blumhouse Pictures has said they're going to be redoing the sequels to the Halloween movies, basically ignoring everything after the first original Halloween movie. But they said that we're kind of ignoring all past films past the first one, and it picks up right after the first one, but it's an alternative reality. So you can watch the old sequels, but these are new sequels. And there's a quote that's going to have to be beeped, but you'll get over it. Danny McBride, who wrote the script with a guy named David Gordon Green, said, and I'll quote, "I just hope that we don't fuck it up and piss people off." Isn't that a magnificent quote? You know what I said. That's just a magnificent quote to throw in about a movie that you're in the process of making.
Yeah. I like that. I mean,
that's a good attitude to have.
It is a good attitude. I mean, it's a realistic attitude. I like that they're throwing away everything after the, not that, they just all kind of ran together. And the sequel, the Halloween 2, of course, actually did pick up immediately at the end of the first movie, which I thought was pretty slick. And that was the last Halloween sequel that was really, really worth watching anyway, because this Halloween 3 wasn't even a Halloween movie. It was just a completely different plot line. It was stupid. And after that, then it was just endlessly recycled bits of the guy in the Bill Shatner mask killing people. And it's like they all just bleed together, pun intended. So it doesn't make any sense to remake the sequels. Why would you do that? So, yeah, go into fresh territory.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to do it, do something different. And hopefully you'll do something. Yeah, and don't F it up, Danny McBride.
Go.
Good quote by Danny McBride. Doesn't surprise me he would say that. That's just from... He strikes me as one of those actors who's always just playing himself. Always.
That's the easy way to do it, unless you're Kevin Costner. Then it gets really boring.
He's
fine. Hi, I'm Robin Hood, and I'm from Iowa. What the hell?
He's fine in some movies. And not so much in Robin Hood. Yeah, that was
the
that
rest
was
of that Robin Hood movie I really liked, but when he came on the screen, I'm like, oh, really?
Robin Hood. He came, like you said, he came in from Iowa and he's visiting visiting his cousins in the Shire.
If you build it, he will shoot an arrow through it.
Yeah, that was not a good movie. Anyway.
speaking of Halloween movies and shooting arrows through things. Actually, I'm not sure what the arrow through things has to do with it. You saw a movie called 7852.
I did see a movie called 7852, which is a documentary. It's a documentary based on a classic psycho thriller horror film called Psycho.
Ooh, and how convenient.
How convenient it was. One of the reasons I watched this, because this is billed as a documentary strictly about the shower scene. The title comes from the fact that there were 78 cuts to produce a 52-second scene.
Wow.
And then that's accurate. What's not accurate is it's not just about the shower scene. It's about the movie in general, but it does focus on the shower scene. And it's interviews with several directors, some film critics. I mean, if you like film, you're going to like this movie quite a bit. I mean, if you're not a fan of how movies are made, it would be pointless because you'd be bored silly, and so I wouldn't recommend it.
I make videos, and 78 cuts is a lot for anything.
Yeah, 78 cuts is a lot. And 78 cuts for a 50, I mean, it took, I believe, 5 days to shoot. And they wound up using 52 seconds. They did use a body double. They actually do interview the actress who stood in for Janet Leigh, which is interesting. And she was close to nude because she kind of had to be, even though you don't really see anything because...
I think that's a different kind of nudity than sexual nudity. If you've got a character who's taking a shower...
Right.
Who takes a shower with their clothes on?
It's about, the way they could have staged it, she could have worn something, but, you know, she turned out wearing like a small little patch in a particular place. And you can probably guess where that place is, just for the sake of her own modesty, which
left
of course,
nostril.
Yeah, there you go. Which they weren't going to show on film back then anyway.
No.
But it does talk about how people were totally freaked out when this came out, because you got to remember this is a long time ago, 57 years ago. And
wow, it is, isn't it?
Such a and the violence was just way over the top. And this is a mainstream film. This is from Hitchcock. I mean, one of the biggest directors at the time. This
literally. Was
this, yeah. Well, yeah, literally too.
Sorry.
And people were very familiar with him because he'd had the TV show. It had been on, I think, by that point for about 4 or 5 years. So they felt comfortable with, they knew what they were getting with him. And this was so far off from what he'd done before. This was like the first slasher film, but it's far beyond that. So it was shocking, especially because Janet Leigh was a major star. Spoiler alert, she's in the shower. So if you haven't seen it yet, yeah, I don't know where you've been.
How?
Yeah, but people were not used to that happening to the lead actress. It's like...
Well, that quick into the movie, too.
Yeah, she's in for about a third of the movie, and then she's not. And people were totally freaked out because they were convinced that they had seen her just stabbed repeatedly. And when you actually pay attention, and you can by virtue of this documentary, too, there's only one scene where it actually shows the knife on her body. And they filmed it just by reversing the film. They pressed it against the body double's body, put a little trickle, thin trickle of fake blood underneath, so it looked like it was almost entering her body. But it's when you freeze frame it, it looks like it's maybe a quarter of an inch into her, which of course it isn't. It's just pressed against her skin. And they reversed the film, so when they pulled it away, it looked like the knife was going in. And then they stopped it right at that point, so it didn't go in further. It's all camera work, which is the brilliance of the scene and the brilliance of the film, because it totally changed the film industry, really, because did a lot of things. It was shot on a really low budget. Initially, the film editor thought there wasn't much to the movie. He didn't like it, and he recommended they just recut it down to an hour and put it on the TV show.
because that would go over well.
Yeah. Obviously, there wasn't going to be much to that shower scene, obviously. And Hitchcock, of course, said, no, that's not what we're doing. Don't be stupid. It was the first movie where they insisted... And again, it's just the brilliance of the promotion. No audience member, no one will be admitted into the audience after the first 5 minutes of the film, which they never really insisted on that kind of thing before, but it was just the hype because, you won't know what's going to happen. You'll be lost. And of course, the first 5 minutes just kind of sets things up. And that doesn't matter. But it really created the anticipation. So it was viral marketing before people ever heard of the term. Again, the violence was brought to the mainstream, which had never been done. Killing off the lead, I can't say that it had never been done, but it was certainly the biggest example of it. I mean, it really changed films in so, so many ways. And that shower scene is like you said, that's a lot of cuts. That's a lot of cuts for a long scene, but for 52 seconds of screen time. But that's how it worked, because they just juxtaposed those images and things happen so fast. You think you see things that aren't even there.
Clever.
It's just very clever.
I'm not meaning that facetiously. That seriously, it's a clever thing to do.
It is. It is. And actually, the League of Decency, which was an organization of the Catholic Church, who was upset about certain things that looked terrible, they screened and they thought it was, this is awful. You can't do this. You can't do that. So they wrote back and suggested some changes. And Hitch said, okay, fine, no problem. And he sent them back a copy, I guess, maybe 3 weeks later or a month later, something like that, with no changes whatsoever. Uh-huh. All he did was agree he would do them. And I guess they just assumed he did them because they said, okay, fine. So he made zero changes whatsoever to the film and stood by his vision and created a classic movie. He created an entire genre. So, again, if you're interested in film, really, really, really good movie. And if you're not that interested in how things are put together, watch something else. There are other movies we will talk about that you will enjoy much more.
Like Coco,
probably.
Which beat out Justice League over the weekend. Which I was expecting Coco to do good because it's. I'm not convinced it's completely a kids movie. Because of the, having to do with the Day of the Dead thing. I have not seen Coco.
Nor have I.
my kids weren't that interested, so we didn't go. Although it's a Pixar movie, and Pixar movies generally do really good with kids. I just wasn't expecting it to beat out Justice League, which I knew was going to drop dramatically because it's the second weekend and people have issues with the movie. Although it has cleared over $400 million globally.
Right.
So,
which is still a long, long way from breaking even, because allegedly it has a $300 million budget, and that doesn't include distribution. That's just to make the movie.
Or advertising, of which they're...
Right.
Well, we'll get to advertising on that in a minute. It didn't fly the way they thought it would.
Not close to it.
On Turkey Day. And turkeys, as we know from WKRP in Cincinnati, don't fly. See? There we go. Before we actually get into the full DC news thing, though, you did see something that... Well, it kind of flew, I think. I don't know. Lady Bird. Which has nothing to do with birds.
It has nothing to do with birds. It's...
There might have been an airplane, but...
Really, really good movie. If, for instance, you like the film Brooklyn, came out a couple of years ago, with Saoirse Ronan, which I finally realized how to pronounce her name, because I look at it and it's like, oh, it's Saoirse Ronan, and it's not a Saoirse Ronan. God, she's a great actress. Lady Bird is a coming-of-age, growing-up tale about a high school senior, and just her fights and... struggles with classmates and her mom and what she wants to do with her life and her boyfriends and all the rest of it. It's just a slice of life movie, and it's terrific. It's so well done. She's fantastic. She's going to get an Oscar nomination for this. If she doesn't, I'll be really, really pissed. Brooklyn, by the way, that came out the same year as Room, and Brie Larson won Best Actress for Room, which was deserved. But even then, I thought Ronan should have won. Because I just thought she was amazing in Brooklyn, and she is amazing in this. And it's a comedy drama. It's much lighter than Brooklyn. Again, it's just about this girl growing up, but she's a fascinating character. I mean, she's absolutely the way teenagers can be in all their horrific glory. Laurie Metcalf. And if you know the name Laurie Metcalf, it's because you were probably a fan of the Roseanne show. That was her sister. She is terrific as the mom. She does a great, great job. Really, really good movie. Honestly, I can't recommend it enough. And it's very different from the kind of movies we usually talk about, because typically we go more of the superhero stuff because we like those things.
Yeah.
Man, this is a good movie. Like I said, I chose to see this instead of Coco, because Lady Bird is the kind of movie that if you don't go see it in the first couple of weeks, good chance it's going to be gone. Just because it's those kinds of movies just don't make a ton of money. They're not built that way. They're not going to make that much money. Here we go. $1.5 million. That was the box office for Lady Bird.
Ouch.
You know, so.
But still.
That's the weekend. So far, $10
million. Oh, okay. But much better.
But, you know, I have no idea. The budget's not listed. But they probably could have made it for $1 million. I mean, it doesn't look cheap at all, but it's just shot on location. She's the only person in it other than Metcalf, that has a lot of name recognition. They probably didn't spend a whole lot of money on this movie. They didn't have to. I mean, they spent the money on the script, the direction. I mean, it's such a good movie. Lady Bird is just her nickname.
They spent $10 million on it.
Okay, well, then they have some time to... They'll have to work to make it back, because they'll have to pull in 20, obviously. But eventually they'll get it through, you know, deals with Netflix or Amazon or whatever. So,
right.
But really, really good movie and a couple of great performances. I mean, I will be shocked if Ronan isn't nominated and Metcalf isn't nominated. One of them will win a Golden Globe for sure, because just seems they give those out like candy for some reason. So, I mean, it's a comedy drama, so there's a good chance it'll be nominated in the comedy category, that's one thing I like that the Golden Globes do, is they split dramas and comedies into two different categories. So twice as many awards. It's fun.
Yay.
Anyway, go see Lady Bird. And again, that's her nickname. She gives that name to herself. So that's her given name because she gave it to herself, as she says.
Kind of like LL Cool J.
Quite like that, but without the coolness. Actually, okay. She is pretty cool. Fun, fun movie, even though it does have a lot of serious things to say.
So going from Lady Bird to A Crow.
Aha.
Yeah, see, segue. Jason Momoa, he of the Aquaman Game of Thrones fame, and I'm sure a lot of other stuff, has started production on his reboot. I'm calling him his reboot because he's playing the title character in The Crow. Now, if you remember The Crow from the 1994 version, with Brandon Lee, which I thought was a great movie, even though Brandon Lee was actually killed, three-fourths of the way through shooting, and they used a body double to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a great movie with a very interesting storyline, but
this might just be me.
Is Jason Momoa too big to play the character of The Crow?
That was my first thought, and it's a very different physical build, and I can't even think of the actor's names that have played The Crow since then. There have been at least three actors that have played him. And they all are built similar to Brandon Lee. I guess they can change it a little bit. My thought is anybody going to watch it? I mean, it's The Crow, but none of the sequels did exactly a huge amount of money. And this guy he doesn't pull in crowds. I mean,
he's popular, but he's not the draw that.
No, like I said last week, he's like the low rent version of The Rock. I mean, he played Conan the Barbarian in that relaunch, which went nowhere.
I watched it. It wasn't as good as it could have been.
No, I wasn't. I watched it too, and it's just kind of like he's in a TV series called Frontier. Anybody even familiar with that? I mean, it's just
I haven't heard of it.
He doesn't have any drawing power. Frontier is either on Netflix or Hulu. It's one of those, and it just blends into the background of, it's one of those series. he's entertaining, all right, I like them in the little bit of I've seen of them in Game of Thrones. I've just seen a few episodes with him here and there because I ain't got HBO and he ain't stealing it. But he was okay in Conan, but.
I think he's one of those actors where, he's in that, good. He's bonus points.
That's exactly how I feel about it. And it's like I don't think he's ever going to be like the lead that carries something.
No offense to him, because I know he could come in and kick both our asses.
Oh, but by blinking, probably.
Yeah.
He's likable, and he's obviously large and has an intense screen presence, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't seem to have it, which The Rock has it. Dwayne Johnson definitely has it, which is why he's in like 15 movies a year. And he's going to continue to be in 15 movies a year until he's tired of it, obviously.
Whether we want him to or not.
Yeah, exactly. And same thing. He'll do whatever he wants to us. So no offense, but I don't really see. I don't see that working.
I saw him attached to it, and I said he's just too big to play the character the way it needs to be played. And I read the books. He's not supposed to be, Hulk smash size, which Jason Momoa is. So I'm going to make a prediction that Jason Momoa's next movie, he's going to be the lead in the all live action reboot of Stuart Little. Just because.
That hurt.
Moving on. back to the Justice League, because we keep skirting the issue.
Yeah.
And we've only brought it up in every story so far. What do you think?
It's a big story.
This occurred to me earlier this week. Do you think this movie could have been saved by marketing it better and just having, because this week they re-released all the movie posters, this time with Superman in them. Do you think the movie would have been helped a little bit as far as getting people into a theater? Not the script or how they built the movie or anything, Could they have gotten more people in the theater if Superman had been included in the marketing from the beginning?
For the first week, they might have gone over 100. But after that, the movie is the movie, and then the marketing doesn't matter. I think it might have gotten them 6, 8, maybe 10 million extra, and that's it. Because the marketing only works before it opens. It's not like we didn't know
he was going to be in it.
Right, right. Most people knew that already. The marketing...
If you didn't know he was going to be in it, then you wouldn't have cared and might have gone, ooh, a Superman movie, and gone right. to see it.
Yeah, I mean, the marketing only works until the movie opens, and after that, the movie stands on its own.
Yeah.
Because then people say, well, then people look online and say, oh, look, the user rating is this, if they care about that. A lot of people don't, and, you know, in a lot of ways, you shouldn't. Yeah, it might have helped initially, but after that, the movie is, and it's an okay movie, and that's it. It has some really major flaws that should have been fixed. And like we said last week, when the director's cut, the extended edition, when that comes out on Blu-ray or in UHD and 4K and whatever else, I think it'll be a better movie because things will be explained a little bit better. It'll be fleshed out more. But regardless, you still have the basic fact that, which has been a problem with the character forever, Superman, is far too powerful in a lot of the incarnations, which is why they've depowered Superman several times in the history of the character. And it's a great scene. You mentioned the scene, and I enjoyed the scene when Superman is fighting three of the Justice League, and the Flash comes zooming around to play his little super speed trick, and Superman just slides his eye over, looks at him, turns his head. Obviously, he reacts just as fast as the Flash. That's a problem. You don't need the Flash if Superman is as fast as the Flash, do you?
No.
You don't need Wonder Woman or Aquaman if he's stronger than they are. You don't need Batman if he's as smart as Batman, which in some cases he's kind of portrayed to be. You know, it's step it down, guys, because, again, like I said last week, this is a movie about the Justice League unites. They didn't have to. All they had to do was get Superman back.
But they need Cyborg because Superman doesn't know how to use a PC.
Yeah, they don't, you know.
Other than that.
All they needed was Batman. And go find a damn Lazarus Pit, and it's done. And I know they haven't introduced the Lazarus Pit in the universe, but that's been around in the DC universe in the comics for how many decades?
They it's in the TV series.
You know, that's what bothers me most about this film is that there's no reason for the Justice League to exist. Because really all they did was bring Superman back from the dead, and they didn't need all those people. And they had arguments about whether or not it was a good idea. Actually, it impeded their progress to their one goal, which is to bring Superman back to kill to destroy the big bad. So the whole movie is pretty freaking pointless. There's no fixing that other than having a completely different script. And again, it's entertaining, but when we've seen so many good DC movies from the animated division, frankly, it pisses me off that they're so blind and stupid and stubborn that they just don't go borrow a script that they own and remake the damn thing. And it would make, I think, if they did Justice League Doom on the big screen, live action, I would be more than fine with that. I think that would be good. So, and we're fans of the animated thing, and 10 times as many people as the animated fans are out there that aren't even familiar with that, and they would go see this as a fresh picture, and they would be blown away by it. But no, let's make up some half-assed script, which doesn't make sense in a lot of ways, and the basic premise is wrong, and blow our chance. This is the worst performing DC Universe film so far. The worst.
Yeah.
You got it kind of backwards, don't you guys? You've been building towards this for years, and you've turned out your worst performing product. Suicide Squad, for Christ's sake, is making more money than this.
Ouch.
Got issues. Because that movie wasn't any good. And talk about, it's about second tier villains, for God's sakes. You got problems if your big, big picture is underperforming this well. There's a great article on Forbes about it. And there's a terrific line. The author's name is Mark Hughes. He writes about film for Forbes, and he does want to tell people that I'm not an evil puppet trying to ruin things fans like. I'm not a secret paid ninja working for Disney. You know, mm-hmm. So he's just telling the truth as he sees it. And he says he thinks it'll probably wind up making about 700 to 750 million total global when it's all done, which when you take all the money out, they'll make about, if they're lucky, 30 million bucks. That's a big expenditure to wind up with $30 million. And you've got a lot of production companies splitting that. That's not what they were looking for.
Although, do you think it could be that they think that this is just going to be a massive launching pad for the solo movies?
Yeah, but wouldn't you want a massive launching pad that made $1 billion like Marvel does?
No, that'd make too much sense.
Again, like I said last week, fire everybody who touched this travesty and put Patty Jenkins in charge of the entire universe. And you got a fighting chance of making really good movies every time out, because she's the only one since Christopher Nolan, and that's actually pre the universe, who's actually made a decent DC live action film. And she made a really, really good one. I'm not sure if time will tell if I'm deciding if I can feel if it's great or not. A lot of people think it's great. It's easily the best. Easily the best, hands down. There's no one thinks that any of these other movies, well, no one in their right mind thinks that Wonder Woman is not the best DC Universe movie since the end of Christopher Nolan's trilogy. And it's, I can't imagine anyone thinking it's not better than The Dark Knight Rises, for that matter. So,
actually, speaking of Christopher Nolan real quick, 7 of his movies are going to be released in 4K Ultra HD Blu-rays on December 19th.
Woo!
Including the 3 Bat movies.
That's a lovely thing.
Along with The Prestige, Inception, Interstellar, and Dunkirk.
All excellent movies. Prestige is one that I think doesn't get enough.
I agree.
Yeah, Prestige is a really, really good movie. And you have the fun of watching
Batman versus Wolverine.
Exactly. It's Batman versus Wolverine. It's like, how can you beat that? That's amazing. It's like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And it kind of almost is like Batman versus Wolverine, too.
It kind of is.
Yeah, very interesting. they're both such good actors. And, man, that's a cool movie. Very, very fun.
A bit of a spoiler for the Justice League movie. In a post-credit sequence, we get introduced to Deathstroke.
Yes.
Who is supposed to be the big bad in the may or may not exist The Batman movie. Because Ben Affleck, he's in it, he's not in it, he's thinking about being in it. It's kind of like Angelina Jolie at this point. Did you think...
Yes.
I'm going to have charges filed against me just for that joke. did Deathstroke look as good in the movies as he did in the TV series? Because I think Arrow absolutely nailed it.
I don't watch much of Arrow, but I have seen Deathstroke in it. And I didn't think of that immediately, but I wasn't impressed. And that's why. He actually looks better in the relatively low-budget TV show than he did in this brief appearance, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I guess the $300 million went someplace else. And it's not that it's a bad costume, but...
It's not. It's just not as good as the one from TV.
Don't you own the TV property? Why didn't you just do that? I don't get it. Makes no sense. I did like that teaser. It was like, okay, that's interesting. Although that sounds like, well, we're not going to get to Darkseid anytime soon, are we? Interesting. Yeah. Let's drag it out for another underperforming god-awful. Well, it's not god-awful, but compared to the expectations, it's god-awful. It's a decent movie. Go see it. But whatever. It's just disappointing. The other post-credit scene, the first post-credit scene, that actually made me happy. And I do, again, I just finished ranting for God, how many minutes was I talking about how overpowered Superman is? This was the fun aspect of it. This is the fun aspect. Because everybody, I have had discussions 3 times in a previous job with a coworker over serious discussions that lasted quite a bit of time over who would win a race between Superman and the Flash. Yeah. So I did like that that's in there. I thought that was cool. That was fun. But since they just kind of showed the start of it, you don't really know who wins. And, you know,
I kind of like that they leave those open, though, mm-hmm. sometimes.
Oh, yeah, they should. They should leave that open.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that made it fun. That was one of the most enjoyable moments in the movie to me. And it was in a post-credit scene. So
was it really a post-credit scene, or was it just an hour and a half pre-credit scene that led up to that?
Actually, if I think of it that way, I like it better.
See,
there we go. Although I sure wasted my time for the advertisement for the Superman Flash race, but that's all right.
The TV series did something I think is interesting this week. On Supergirl, they introduced the Legion of Superheroes,
which
they have not done anywhere. Spoiler, in case you haven't watched it on your DVR, the new show comes out tomorrow. they brought back Mon-El, who was, I'm not even going to go into that storyline, but apparently he's been to the future.
Ah.
And he came back in sleep capsules with other people, and they had to rescue someone because the sleep capsule was failing. And the girl they brought out, if you happen to have the DC Encyclopedia like I do and pay attention to the icons in the background, you kind of go, hey, that's Saturn Girl. Now, bear with me, because the Legion of Superheroes had some really, really stupid names. Saturn Girl being one of the better ones.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did have a character created back in the 60s named Karate Kid. And the jokes they've made about him since. But they've insinuated that the other members of the Legion are also in those other sleep capsules. So we're going to get those in the TV series. And I think it's interesting that the TV series is actually introducing all these DC characters in ways that they should just combine the movies with this TV series, because the TV series is introducing the characters a lot better. They have time to.
Well, so why right. not? They have time to, exactly. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you remember some of the other names, other more unusual? Was Matter Eater Lad one of them, or is that another?
I want to say that is one of them.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, there were so many just
Bouncing Boy,
terrible names, which, and terrible powers. I guess they just thought they're
really weird powers. Although I mean, they work. Bouncing Boy was just a fat guy who could. He was basically a rubber bouncy ball.
Yes.
As a human, and weirdly it worked. But you look at the name of the character and look at the character and go, okay, Super Dork. No, it works.
Super
figure.
Super Dork is pretty close though. Pretty close.
And actually, sticking with the DC TV series, tomorrow starts the four-part crossover between all four of the TV series, Crisis on Earth X. With Nazis at a wedding. So go ahead and watch that. It'll be fun.
Nazis at a wedding. There's Bouncing Boy and Brainiac. Brainiac 5 was good. I did like Brainiac
5. Brainiac 5 is going to be introduced. We did know that was coming.
Oh, that's excellent. He should be. Brainiac 5 was always an interesting character.
I always thought so.
Yeah.
Something else that's going to be coming, and this is only the third thing I've heard about coming on the DC digital service, is a Harley Quinn, the animated series. And it looks, they said this is not for kids. It looks a lot like Heavy Metal to me, the animated series.
Interesting.
I'm not sure I like the idea, but I have very little say in the matter. They've ordered 26 half-hour episodes.
Wow. That's interesting.
We'll see how that goes.
That's 26, really?
Yeah.
That's doesn't happen very often, especially now when so many series are 10, 13, 13 sometimes 8. 26, wow. They obviously think it's going to work.
Well, you know, it's Harley Quinn. She's popular now, so hey, why not?
Depends who plays her.
She is supposed to be, I do know that, and I want to say...
Played by Matter Eater Lad. Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, Triplicate Girl, Phantom Girl, Chameleon Boy, Colossal Girl, Boy, Invisible Kid, Kid Quantum, Star Boy, Sun Boy, Shrinking Violet, Ultra Boy. Wow. Dream Girl, Feral, they had a lot of lads. Feral Lad.
Lots of lad. Well, it's from the 60s.
Shadow Lass. Oh, my God. Anyway.
You going to move on to Nightwing?
Yeah, please.
Okay, because they're making a Nightwing movie.
Again, now, maybe.
They've already cast Dick Grayson, who ends up being Nightwing in the Titans series. No word yet on whether he's going to be Robin or Nightwing when the Titans series gets going, but they are making a Nightwing movie, and they announced they're going to be doing an open casting call. However, they have said that if you, as advice for people who want to try out to play Dick Grayson, you have to know the character because, and I'll quote here, basically they're not accepting just any potential dick that walks in off the street. And I don't have to beep that because that's exactly what they're doing. I just thought that was a wonderful quote. So we might be getting an unknown to play one of the big... I think Nightwing's one of the big characters in DC. Because he is the original Robin, if somehow you missed that. Big name character, so hey, why not? Get someone new. Get some fresh blood into it. Although there is a character in the comic movie industry that's not going to be where he's supposed to be. It's a crappy segue, but it's all I've got at the moment. Marvel has said that Adam Warlock, who we're fairly certain we saw at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, is not going to be in Avengers 3, Avengers 4, or even Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
That's really strange.
Well, I mean, his biggest claim to fame as a character was defeating Thanos in the Infinity War, which has to do with the Infinity Gauntlet,
right. Which
is Avengers 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. If you're not putting him there, what the hell's the point?
My thought is that that's just an absolute bald-faced lie. I don't see how they can not put him at him. Well, they can not put him in, but if they don't use him, like you said, if they don't use him in Avengers 4, at least, I'm assuming they're never going to use him because why would they?
It just doesn't make sense.
No. So I tend to think that they're just lying just to fool people. And going back to the Nightwing thing.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
No, that's fine. You know, they have a guy who's played Robin on film recently. I'm not sure I really like him. I'm not sure if I like him continuing in that. But what about Joseph Gordon-Levitt? As Dick, of course, he played John Blake, which isn't, but he was going to be Robin. I wonder, different character, different universe.
They said what they wanted for a Nightwing is someone who is extraordinarily athletic and gymnastic.
Well, he can portray gymnastic. I don't know if I would say extraordinarily athletic, but he could become so if he wished to be.
I suppose.
What they would need is someone who could...
I think they want someone who's... I think what they're looking for is a... And I apologize for phrasing it this way. A taller, thinner Jackie Chan. Younger Jackie Chan. Someone who's, they don't have to train as much. Someone who's already
taller. They want a taller Bruce Lee.
There you go.
Not sure you're going to, I'm not sure there are many actors that are out there who are like already Nightwing. They're going to have to train somebody.
Right.
You know, unless
there's going to have to be training involved at some point.
Yeah. And what basically I think, you know, what they're looking for, they're looking for Randy Orton that can act. Randy Orton, yes. Physically, is perfect for Nightwing. And he may be capable of being a terrific actor. I don't know. No idea. He certainly portrays a badass on TV when we see him in the ring. So, you know, why not? Randy Orton, if you're listening, that would be really weird. But if you're listening, go audition. It's an open casting call. And physically, you would be perfect for Nightwing. Seriously, he would be, right? But... I have no idea if the guy can
act. A bit large, but we'll take it.
Yeah, but, you know, in a world where Batman runs at about 250 solid muscle now, you know, he's okay. I mean, because
it'll do.
Yeah, it'll do. It'll do. But yeah, physically, I mean, he's long and lean. He's not overly muscular. That's kind of what they would want. And he can certainly jump off things like cages and tables and ladders. So, you know, he's
got that
part down.
Well, no, his accent would throw it off. Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy. He's kind of a little small.
No, Jeff Hardy's gotten considerably larger than.
I mean, his height.
No, he's 6'2".
Is he? Yeah, seems so. He's. I guess it's because he's.
You get thrown off when you see.
He's got the squat build compared to his brother.
No, that's Matt. Matt's much more squat.
Oh, yeah. Jeff. I was going the other way. Yeah, Jeff. Now, Jeff.
You get thrown off when you see professional wrestlers in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're all, I think with the exception of like AJ Styles and Rey Mysterio, they're all huge.
Rey Mysterio. That'd be excellent.
Well, yeah, Rey's 5'2". What the hell? if I'm 10 inches taller than you, wait, what? Yeah, I mean, you don't realize how big they are until you stand next to them, and then you go, oh, you are large. I thought you were all my height, and oh, no, you are not. Not even close.
Yeah, actually, Jeff Hardy, that would be good. And if he can act like a sober person, that would be helpful, too.
He's sober now.
I'm sorry, Jeff, don't come beat me. Although, get in line, because we have larger
Randy
people.
Orton will come get you first.
Yeah, we have larger people waiting. You all have Jason to get behind Momoa. Jason Momoa. Yeah, exactly. But we support The Rock. Maybe he'll protect us.
Right. Yeah. Someone who's not going to... I'll try to save you out of this. Ready? Here we go. Someone who will not be playing Nightwing would be Jude Law.
No, he won't.
Because he's already going to be in the next Captain Marvel movie.
Yes, he will.
And this would be the Marvel one. Although, we'll make this a little bit weirder. He's going to be playing a character named Dr. Walter Lawson, who is the Kree, that's an alien race, soldier named Mar-Vell.
Meaning, oh my God.
He is the original Captain Marvel from Marvel comics.
Oh, that's cool. I like that he's playing. I hope that's not the kiss of death for this film.
I hope it isn't.
Because Jude Law is not exactly box office dynamite, speaking of people who just don't, which to me is weird because I think he's a terrific actor.
I like him. I have yet to see something I haven't liked him in.
Exactly. And I've yet to see something that I think of offhand that has made a lot of money. Other than, the Sherlock Holmes flicks, but Robert Downey Jr. is kind of box office gold at that point. But, and again, the casting in that was completely reversed. I mean, I understand why they did it, but physically and everything else, Jude Law should have been Sherlock. Watson would have been Downey. That would have been perfect, but, you know.
Go to the Cinema Savant's website, which oddly enough is cinemasavants.com, about...
Isn't that weird?
3/4 of the way down, there will be a video of Robert Downey Jr., Ed Byrne, and Graham Norton talking about the casting in a black and white silent movie format talk show. It'll make sense when you see it. Just go to our website and watch that. It's very funny. I'm not sure he's not going to be the draw for this movie.
He's not.
Samuel L. Jackson in it.
He's not the draw.
Is it Brie Larson?
Brie Larson. He's an excellent addition, though, because I really like him. And as a supporting, he definitely adds a lot of weight in a good way, as does Samuel Jackson. So,
yeah,
I really like the casting. It's just... Again, I really can't figure out why this guy is not one of the biggest actors as far as popularity.
I think that's in the States. I think overseas he does a lot better.
Yeah, he's very, very good. Very cool.
He is.
Anyway.
Other news out of the Disney camp. And this one struck me as odd. It has to do with Disney and Hulu. Because Disney co-owns Hulu with 21st Century Fox, Comcast, and Time Warner. And it was announced that Disney is the only one set to lose around $100 million in the next fiscal year due to the launch of Hulu Live. And that kind of threw me off that Disney is the only one losing money. I'm not sure why the other ones aren't. If you know why, that would be awesome. I don't get that.
I don't know why.
Hulu is something we got in our house recently. And being cheap, we went with the $5.99 a month for the next year thing with limited commercials. Now, I would like to point out that what I thought limited commercials meant was they would have shorter commercial breaks and still have the variety of commercials. And I'm wrong. Because my wife, who over this weekend discovered the TV show The Medium, which is not something I particularly care for because it's, God, it's slow and I don't, it's just not a show that I care for. All of the cast is kind of, anyway, every commercial break has had the exact same commercial, singular, since Wednesday evening. We are recording Sunday at, it's about noon. Every 10 or 15 minutes from my living room, I hear what sounds like, well, it's a commercial for Kia. It is a Christmas commercial where they're playing the dun, 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 song. I don't remember what it's called. I don't care.
Carol of the Bells.
I knew there was bells involved.
Yes.
It's that song, only it's done by the guy who did the theme for NFL on Fox, because it's that guitar. So it ends with, dun, 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 dun. You're watching NFL on a Kia Sorento. What the hell? No, that's wrong. And maybe that's where Hulu is losing its money, because you've only got the one commercial. Branch out, for God's sake, branch out. My 9-year-old daughter yesterday said, I'm really sick of Christmas already because of that damn song. My 9-year-old, and I'm quoting. Find another sponsor, guys. I'm not going to buy a Kia. We're still making payments on a Toyota.
So,
because the guy at Kia screwed us. Find another commercial, please.
So they stole from Sam Spence and bastardized Carol of the Bells.
Yeah.
And it's for a NFL on Kia commercial. Is I can't remember if Hulu, because I've got Hulu too, and I don't remember at the top of my head. Isn't Hulu one where you can say, yes, I like that ad, or no, I don't like that ad?
We haven't found that option yet.
Then it's probably not Hulu. I know there's one of the services where you can just go click and they don't show that ad again. And I wonder, maybe is what's happened is someone kept on, don't show me this ad, don't show me this ad, don't show me this. And they wound up with, there's only one ad left and you can't get rid of that one. That would be awful, but kind of funny since it's not happening to me. That's, yeah, looking at the article, because I saw an article too about the Disney losses, and it sounds like maybe they're all losing money. It's just Disney's the only one who came out and reported, hey, this is exactly what we've got invested. This is what we're going to lose. But ultimately, they're looking forward to it because they think they're going to wind up making a ton of money on Hulu.
They will once it gets going.
On Hulu Live. So, yeah, which makes me wonder, okay, if they're invested in Hulu Live, why are they going again with their own streaming service? Unless Hulu Live turns out to be what was called the Disney's own streaming service, but I don't think that's the fact. Doesn't make a lot of sense that you would invest in Hulu and invest $100 million that you, I mean, they invested more than that.
Yourself.
Right. It makes no sense that you would do that. I don't know. But they're making a lot more money than I am, so I'm not going to doubt Disney.
Well, that's true. Speaking of Hulu, you saw something on Netflix that you said was interesting.
Did I really?
Well, something
yes,
about,
I did.
Let's see, who is it? Jim and Andy.
Jim and Andy.
Like a 1950s sitcom.
It does sound like a 1950s sitcom. It's not quite a 1950s sitcom, but it is. It is about a sitcom, kind of. Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond. It's a documentary on the behind-the-scenes look at when Jim Carrey played Andy Kaufman with a movie called The Man in the Moon. And Jim Carrey, method actor, he gets into the roles all the time, which I'm sure is extremely annoying for anyone who works on a lot of those Jim Carrey films, because can you imagine that guy in character on the Ace Ventura movies, or worse, Dumb and Dumber?
I'd rather not.
I would rather not, exactly. Well,
I'd rather watch that Kia commercial again.
Over and over and over. Well, he stayed so in character as Andy Kaufman for throughout the production of Man in the Moon that he drove everyone crazy because Kaufman was basically acted like a lunatic a lot of the times. But it's a really cool look, again, behind the scenes, how movies are made and particular methods. Mm-hmm. And how everyone reacted, because they redid a lot of scenes of parts of his career. So they've got Danny DeVito and Judd Hirsch, and they're redoing scenes from Taxi. And DeVito and Hirsch both, they said it was freaky, because it was like they were working with Andy again, exactly as if they were working with Andy again. And it kind of freaked them, Hirsch especially, because DeVito was kind of like, he seemed to kind of hold it in the back of his head that, yeah, it's a performance, but it's still really freaky. But Judd Hirsch basically acted like Kaufman had come out of the grave. He was just kind of really creeped out by it. I mean, he appreciated it, but it was like, this is beyond weird. And again, it was a compliment that this guy is Andy Kaufman. He's not playing Andy Kaufman. And there are a lot of interviews with Carrey himself about the process and why it was important to him. And, you know, and, oh, the process, blah, blah, blah. He didn't talk about it that way. He just talked about the importance of doing his best to inhabit that character and be Andy Kaufman so he could play him the right way. And he pissed a lot of people off during the production. He even says that he had all this footage himself, and the studio would not let it come out for like extended scenes or anything when the videos came out, because he said, Carrey, and this is a quote from Carrey, he said the studios didn't want people to look at him and think he was an asshole, because he is for much of this production, because again, he's playing a guy who acted like a jerk, because he was always performing. That was his whole point. And that's Carrey's point, just investigating how weird it is to be this guy who's always on, no matter what. There's a long sequence, which you will definitely appreciate, with Jerry the King Lawler. And Lawler talks about, of course, the famous incident when they were on Letterman, and how he said it was definitely a work. He said he and Kaufman were really good friends. They respected each other. You know, this is just what they did. And again, is this a work or not? Who knows? But Carrey and Lawler reenacted the thing with Letterman, and they reenacted that scene, and they had a stunt person who was going to step in for when Andy gets punched or slapped, I should say. It was an open hand slap, which damaged his neck, supposedly. And Carrey was saying, no, I don't want to do that. He was arguing he didn't want to do it because people can tell, blah, blah, blah. And they said, no, this is how we're going to do it. So right when they're filming the scene, he leans into Lawler, and he'd been antagonizing Lawler the entire time. And Lawler, according to this, was legitimately pissed. He said, Andy was one thing, but he said, this guy is just taking it too far. This is ridiculous. As portrayed, he was legitimately pissed at Carrey. And Carrey leaned into him, and he said, you just told him to hit him. Just hit him as hard as he could. And Lawler obliged him. And then the next scene, the next scene is Jim Carrey is getting an MRI done on his neck. He's walking around with a neck brace. And hard to tell, you know, because is this also part of the work? Who knows? But I think Lawler was legitimately pissed at Carrey, and a lot of people were legitimately pissed at him because he just took things so far and never shut it off. But I respected Carrey a lot more after watching that, just how devoted he was to getting it as right as he can. So this kind of excuses like Mr. Popper's Penguins and other utter dreck that he's done in the last few years. I would like to see him get back to doing things like The Truman Show, like The Man in the Moon. It was okay to me, but I never was that much into Andy Kaufman. So it'd be kind of hard to be thrilled about a movie about someone that you were just kind of ambivalent about. But Carrey's performance is absolutely great. And it's really cool to see behind the scenes and just the reactions and how he created that performance. So again, if you like the behind the scenes stuff of the movies, Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, definitely worth watching. That's on Netflix. And by the way, 7852, you got to pay money to see that. That's on Amazon. So you got to really like that stuff. So there you go.
Although if you want to watch something else that's not that, and you mentioned Amazon, this is a Black Friday sale, so there's a very limited time left with this. But every Hayao Miyazaki film is currently half off on Amazon. And I know you've heard us talk about it every week, I think, since we started the show.
Seems like it, yeah.
And sometimes in between when we're not on the air, which would be very weird if you were listening in on those conversations.
Yeah,
it'd be strange. If you want a chance to find out what we're talking about because you don't know yet, now's the time. Half off, go get them. What should they start with, though?
Yeah, hard to tell. I mean, should you start in chronological order? But I would go,
Spirited Away, we watched again recently, and that movie is truly bizarre.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Really weird.
I don't know if I would start with that because to me it's almost like that's the one you save for the last one you watch. Well, it's not the last film he's done and won't be, right. But I don't know, either maybe My Neighbor Totoro or...
I think I actually started with Howl.
A good one to start with. Kiki's Delivery Service.
Kiki's Delivery Service was awesome.
But I would not... The two I would save for towards the end just because you're building... would be Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away, because those are, to me, those are his two best. But it depends on who you talk to, because I guarantee you there are plenty of people who think Kiki is the best, or My Neighbor Totoro, or Ponyo, or Howl, and you know, Nausicaa. It just...
That's one I got it recently, but I haven't seen it yet.
There's no place, that's the wrong place to start. Absolutely no place at all.
I will say don't get it. Do not get Princess Mononoke and think I'll show this to the kids. That's the one you don't show to the kids.
Depending on the age of the kids, but yeah, there's some pretty
young kids.
Mm-mm. There's some pretty heavy duty violence in that, and it's about a.
But not in the other ones, I don't think.
No, there's some
freaky stuff.
There's some scary stuff in Spirited Away, but there's nothing like all. There are some scenes of violence, but not like in Princess Mononoke. So
no, that's the grown up one.
Yeah, that is PG-13, and it's PG-13 for a reason. So pay attention to that rating.
I'm amazed it's not R because of that.
It probably if it was live action, it probably would have been an R. But
absolutely.
Spirit Away is PG, for example. So there's the difference right there. Howl is PG. Ponyo, for that matter, is just G rated. So if you think of it that way, My Neighbor Totoro is G. Where did it go?
We're recommending these G-rated movies. Go figure.
Oh, they're excellent. Excellent movies. Awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, if we don't mention Miyazaki on every show, we should. Because the guy is an absolute genius, gets overused, but this guy, he is a genius.
Something above that.
Yeah, he's the most important figure in animation since Walt Disney. I mean, hands down. I won't say more important because Disney was kind of groundbreaking. Although Miyazaki is too. But yeah, this.
I'm nodding the whole time. I know you can't tell because we're on radio.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, this guy is just a titan of anime.
Absolutely.
And talk about movies that the entire family can enjoy. This is the definition of it. Any of his movies. But his best movies are just. They're not great animated movies. They're great movies, period.
Period.
I mean, Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke, those are the two I would pick out as, I don't know if I would say among my 25 favorite, because there's thousands of movies to pick from. But again, movies, period. Not animated, not kids' movies. I mean, they're just amazing films. So take advantage. And if you don't have, or if you're missing a few from your collection, this is the time to go. Go get them.
Go get them. See, now you've got something to do, because I've run out of show. Have you run out of show?
I've run out of show, too.
Hey, that's convenient. So go get some Hayao Miyazaki movies. And have a good weekend and week, and be careful and stuff, because it's going to be allegedly getting cold and icy and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Not where I am, but, you know, for most of you guys.
Yeah, you Floridians.
Cold and icy. It's going to be 68, I think, tonight. So, yeah, that's kind of icy.
Yeah, bite me. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Mario! Opa! Ride!
Do you think they would let me live in Montana?
I was thinking of the immortal words of Socrates, who said, I drank what?
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but, it's a living.
Darn, that's the end.